Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, we come to you at 20 past 10 UK time, 20 past 11 Paris time, and there are still how many matches still in play, Matt, at Roland Garros? A tournament that doesn't have night sessions?
Yes, which they say very proudly on their website, no night sessions in 2020. I beg to differ.
Do they?
There are still three matches going on, and yes, this feels like the day where the French Open caught up with the rest of the Grand Slams, and now they've got a roof, they've got some lights, and they've decided to use every bit of time in the day and night and fill it with tennis. And we're here to cover it.
And there's a good chance that Medvedev and Fucsovics will still be doing that in about 17 hours' time. Now, I commentated on the first two sets of that and handed over to a colleague, and I feel like I've handed him a grenade because, of course, Medvedev is fighting back and has won the third set. And of course, John Millman, David, your prediction for the day is busy losing.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's finally pulled his finger out. Well, he's two sets and a break down. He suddenly started to play like Rafael Nadal. And so, you know, maybe there's life in it yet. We better stay
Shall
on until
we
the end.
Start with Rafael Nadal, the 12-time champion.
Yeah,
I can't think of
that.
Anyone quite as worthy as that to start with. I didn't see a ball of this because I was watching Alexander Bublik be kind of fabulous on Suzanne Longlen. So who watched Rafael Nadal take to this brand new, cold, roofed Philippe Chatrier court for the first time in a competitive match?
I saw all of it. I commentated on it for BBC Radio. And
Was the roof on? Was the roof on? Because it was a...
Was it?
It was...
No,
it was a...
It was
a day of two halves.
It
started off looking like just genuine apocalypse. It looked like, well, there's just no way anyone is going to play tennis in this weather at any stage today. Start of play was delayed by about an hour and a half. And then actually, sort of within a couple of hours of play starting, it felt quite dry, and there was even some blue sky around. So I think, Matt, you're saying that by the time Nadal came onto court, that was the case.
Yeah, that's right. I think the first two matches, I think, were under the roof, and then the second two were not under the roof. I watched a bit of this match. David, I'm sure we'll be able to talk about it in more detail, but there were a few things that struck me. One was that Nadal is trying to tie Federer's Grand Slam record at this tournament. And I feel like it's not really been talked about that much. I just think there's so much else going on, you know, with the fact that we're actually seeing Nadal back at Roland Garros. Roland Garros is happening in September and October. It's COVID times and there's so much else to talk about. But I mean, that is a massive, massive deal and massive, massive storyline. And I don't know, I just feel like it's very much under the radar. I don't know whether it's just me or whether that is the general sense that you're getting from this tournament as well.
Well, David, you commentated, didn't you? How much were you talking about that narrative in the commentary today?
I got to be honest, I think you're right. We didn't talk about it, really. And it does feel overlooked. I noticed one of our colleagues, I don't know whether it was John Wertheim or Chris Clary, just tweeted the other day, by the way, Rafael Nadal is trying to equal Roger Federer's record on the men's side for most Grand Slam singles titles. And that says it all. We're not talking about it. And I don't really know why. And perhaps we're just too far away at this stage. Perhaps, as you said, there are just so many other stories knocking around. That's probably what it is. At the moment, I think everybody's just trying to get used to this scenario, this environment in Paris that nobody's really used to. And actually, what we were talking about in this match was how that was affecting Nadal on a more micro level. Just does he look like he normally does at the start of a tournament? The first thing I should say is his opponent, Igor Gerasimov, who's 83 in the world, 6'5" tall from Belarus. He was really good. He played a really good match, and it was the first two sets were pretty close. It was a single break of serve. He's a strapping guy who just belts the ball. He didn't shrink in the situation against Nadal, and Nadal had to really sort himself out in order to get the win. And he was very professional. He came out. I mean, when he arrived on court, I had another one of those moments where I just thought, God, this is not the same. You know, we had the long reveal of all of his Grand Slam, all of his French Open titles listed by the announcer, which was quite funny. But when he walked onto the court and there all the 1,000 people that had come to watch, who had got tickets for the day, gave him the round of applause. And normally what you get with Nadal is, because it's such an ovation and there's so much noise, he'll sort of wave with both hands one at a time, one with the racket, one with his hand. And this time he just did a single hand wave, because there wasn't really any noise, because there aren't any people to make a big noise. And that whole thing just, it didn't feel quite right. Now, in terms of his performance, first of all, I thought his outfit's really cool. He's wearing sort of Manchester City sky blue. Quite liked that.
How many layers of it?
In terms of he came out in a jacket, but then apart from that, he just went straight for the normal outfit. He didn't look like he was wrapped up at all. But his tennis was good, I thought, pretty good. But it feels a little inhibited. My look at it after 2.5 sets was, that doesn't look like quite the same tennis as it does in the daytime in May. Now, maybe I'm searching too hard. Maybe I'm looking for that too much. But the clay looks different on that court to me to how it used to. I think part of it is because it's under lights. And even in the daytime, sometimes it's under lights and it sort of glistens a little. But it looks wet. The clay looks like it's little bits of mud rather than dust. It doesn't have the same texture, at least to my eyes.
Doesn't it? There are big clumps of it around, like a really bad quality mascara.
Couldn't possibly comment.
Yeah, that's just what I was thinking. I was thinking exactly the same thing. But we had a debate on the radio. I get very confused when people talk about, oh, these conditions suit Stan Wawrinka. He can hit through the clay.
Hang on, we all said exactly that on last night's podcast.
No, but I understand that. But I don't understand why some people are described as that and other people's games appear to be stunted by it, really. But that seems to be what happens to Nadal.
You think Nadal now, is stunted by these conditions?
Well, he looked it to me. I mean, he still won. He still played well enough, fine. He won 6-4, 6-4, 6-2. But I should say he went a break down in the third set, love 2 down. And then poor old Gerasimov turned his ankle and just couldn't run after the ball properly after that. And look, he wasn't about to make a comeback at all. It was going to be straight sets, and I'm convinced of that. And this was only the first match Nadal played, but it still didn't look like we've seen most of Nadal's first round matches at Roland Garros over the last 12 years, or the last 12 titles he's won. The ball just doesn't do the same thing off the surface, it seems to me, that it does every other year.
Yeah, there isn't the same violence off his strings and off the court as we so often see at Roland Garros. I was trying to work out whether that was a conditions thing or it was simply that Nadal hasn't quite hit his stride yet, because this is only his, what, fourth match back since the lockdown. And we know that Nadal is a guy who needs reps and needs matches to kind of get going and get up to full force. And maybe it was a little combination of the two. I mean, he's definitely talking a lot about the conditions, saying they're not ideal, and the ball isn't ideal for him as well. And I believe him when he says that. I think he is quite honest. Some people maybe think that it's excuse making or Nadal being sort of overly sensitive to those sorts of things. But I actually think he's telling the exact truth, and these conditions aren't ideal for his game. But there's still something that I can't back against him. It's still Roland Garros. It's still clay. It's still five sets. Until we see someone actually beat him under these conditions when Nadal is healthy, because I think you could argue that that's never really happened when Nadal's been healthy and kind of at his best, I still am really struggling to find a hard time to believe that it actually will happen. Now, it might, and it is a different tournament. These conditions are going to be so fascinating to monitor throughout these 2 weeks. But I think Nadal said he was reasonably happy with his start. It was kind of what he was expecting from himself. And he's got a couple more rounds before he's going to need to find higher gears, I think.
I do also wonder how nervous and anxious he would have been today. You know, the conditions thing, he knows everything you've just said, David. He knows these conditions are not optimal for him. And I think that would be causing him some anxiety. I think the thing with the balls, not only do the balls not suit his style of play, but they also, I've heard a lot of players talking about them causing greater risk of injury. The heaviness of them, just wearing the body down more. And I could imagine that would be something that would be perhaps preying on Nadal's mind until he's grown in confidence with them. So I think it would have been I'm trying to make myself feel better about the fact that I've got him winning this thing. But I do just wonder if that would have been a significant factor for him today. I think.
I think he does voice his anxieties when he's down playing things, or when he sounds concerned. I think it is because he's concerned, because he's worried about things. Even with all these titles behind him, I don't think he's making that up. And that's just, I think he is like that.
So that was Nadal, who was third on Chatrier today. He followed Serena Williams onto court, David, who for the second slam running was facing Kristi Ahn, her countrywoman, the American number 18, in the opening round. You covered that match as well, I believe, or you certainly watched large portions of it.
And Serena Williams, who I think I've picked to win the title for about the eighth slam in a row,
picked,
as well.
Or you definitely have picked her to beat Jennifer Brady in the final.
Yes, I have. Correct. Look, this match was such a contrast between the first and second sets. The first set took an hour and 14 minutes. She was a breakdown against Kristi Ahn, who played really well in that first set. Serena looked uncomfortable on the surface, and it again reminded me that this is a woman who hasn't played a match on clay yet this year. She's come straight from the US Open. And she just didn't look comfortable out there at all. She was getting put off balance by her opponent. Her opponent's really good play. There was a point at four games all where she smashed a backhand winner down the line and really let it out, all the frustration and nervousness. And she did look nervous out there at that point. She looked anxious. But she got through that first set on a tiebreak. And then in the second set, she was a different player. Totally different player. The second set was less than half an hour. And she'd found her footwork, it seemed to me. She doesn't move like a Simona Halep around the court as a player who looks like she's been born on the surface, but she's learned how to plant her feet in an effective way to give her the foundation to deliver her powerful ground strokes. And goodness me, was she doing that? And that's the other thing, isn't it? When we talk about players who can hit through a surface, I think that's something that Serena Williams can do. And talking to Mars McLagan on BBC Radio, when we were trying to get to the bottom of this conditions thing, as well as the surface, he was talking about the air, the ball not flying through the air, and it can also be a ball type as well that makes a player like Serena Williams or Stan Wawrinka rush. On this surface, in these conditions, they're not being forced to rush. They've got chance to set themselves and really go after you. And she looked really good. By the end of it, she looked happy. She looks really confident. I mean, it's only one round, but I'd say Serena Williams looked in a pretty good place after that first match to me.
Have we heard any comments from the likes of Nadal and Serena Williams, the sort of superstar players in the draw, about the fact that they're having to stay in the tournament-designated hotels? Is my image of Nadal and Serena Williams in sort of adjacent rooms at the out-of-town Holiday Inn, is that a reality, or am I...
It's a good question. You know, we were talking on air about that with Russell Fuller, who's out there, part of the BBC team, and he said that she had been asked about it because she'd stayed in this house in New York, and that she didn't explicitly reference that she was staying there, but that's where it's believed she is staying, like everybody is. But it is an interesting one, isn't it? It's a totally different setup. And yeah, I mean,
especially as,
but she's
so many,
as well.
So many players are superstitious and creatures of total habit. Just being removed from that comfort zone and just having something like that forced upon you. Now, I know we're in a time when everybody's having all sorts of things forced upon them that are difficult to cope with. But just that feeling of that sort of really significant element of your life being out of your control, I can imagine that being quite a big obstacle mentally. I mean, when was the last time Serena Williams would have had to deal with something like that, with dealing with, you know, a leaky shower or a slightly uncomfortable mattress?
Yeah, Russell was mentioning that he is staying in a completely different hotel this year deliberately, just because he doesn't want to feel lonely in the way, and think of the people that he would normally stay at a hotel with when everybody in the team is there, you know, because there's only him and a couple of other British media members.
Doesn't want to be comparing the experience to normal French Opens. That's interesting.
Exactly, yeah. And I don't know. I mean, look, I don't know whether she's got her family there. I'm pretty sure she would have. I don't think Williams would come, frankly, without her daughter there. I haven't heard a huge amount, but she seemed to me in a good place.
Olympia's just on a camp bed by the trouser press.
Maybe she gets a bigger room than our slot. My holiday. I can touch all four walls.
I heard that little segment, your chat with Russell on the radio earlier, and I found it generally really, really fascinating, the experience that Russell is having. I know there are a few British journalists out there. He's the only radio journalist out there, and he's the only member of your team there. So he's sort of dialing in remotely to the bigger setup of you and the team in Salford, and just all of the elements of that were really fascinating. And he said, in black and white, he said, "This does not feel like a Grand Slam." And as much as I've heard people, you know, putting that on Twitter, or seen people putting that on Twitter, that really took me aback. Somebody as measured as Russell saying that. This does not feel like a Grand Slam tournament.
I agree.
Should we stop doing dailies now?
I pretty much had to ask him to repeat that because it took me aback as well. But it makes perfect sense in terms of atmosphere. He's somebody who's been going to all of the Grand Slams for the last 7 or 8 years. And it's his first experience. He didn't go to the US Open, which I guess in some ways might have been more jarring still because of literally nobody being there at all. We've described your experience there, Catherine, through the crowds in the past and how cramped the place normally is. And at the same time as that, it's also buzzing Well, it's neither of those things at the moment. And at this time of year as well, with the weather as it is, it's just weird.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting comparison to the US Open, because, you know, we heard from Mary on the grounds at the US Open, and okay, we heard from her later in the tournament when she'd really seemed to embrace being there. And certainly, I think to her, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I think she would say it did feel like a Grand Slam being at the US Open. So why does the French Open feel different? And I would agree, even from a viewing experience, it's all a little bit weirder. And I was thinking about this, and I guess maybe because the US Open was just the US Open without fans, but this is a French Open at a completely different time of year, as you've said, David, and there's a lack of fans. It just maybe all contributes to it not quite feeling right. And also we're seeing the French Open at night for the first time because they've got these lights. And I don't know about you, but I'm finding these sort of concrete stands at night quite spooky and eerie and quite difficult to watch. And it's just not what we're used to. And therefore I don't know whether it doesn't feel like a Grand Slam, or it just doesn't quite feel like the French Open. I guess maybe they're the same thing. But I would certainly agree that it's a different feeling to the US Open.
Yeah,
Daniil Medvedev's just gone out, by the way.
Extra zombie apocalypse vibes about it, this one, hasn't it? Daniil Medvedev has gone out. Yeah, he's extended his clay court losing streak to six matches.
Wow. Mm. Talking about players who can't hit through the court, his shots have no impact, yep, do they, on clay?
No, he just had... He had nothing. He was just hanging in the whole time. And he couldn't possibly have been trying harder to get some kind of foothold in the match against Martin Fucsovics. But Fucsovics just had all this time. You know, like you were describing there with Serena Williams, he just seemed to have time to do whatever he wanted with the ball. He could inject a bit of pace if he wanted to. And he looked so in his comfort zone, because I think he realised early on that there's nothing this guy can do to hurt me. He didn't look like, well, I'm playing the number four seed here. I've got to be right at the top of my game, or I'm toast. You know, even when, because it wasn't a brilliant performance from Fucsovics. It was patchy in places, but when he hit a few errors or lost his serve, he sort of looked at him in. He looked like he still thought, yeah, but I've got this. Because Medvedev wasn't asking any big questions, really. He didn't have any weapons to do damage out there.
Fucsovics always looked like the top 10 player in the world, or top 5 player in the world, and the other guy looked lower ranked quite considerably.
Yeah, on his first break point that he faced Medvedev, he had hit an underarm serve. And that was marvellous, and he deserved a set for that alone. But alas, didn't get him one. And there was...
You had a couple of those today,
there
haven't you?
There was a 10 out of 10 racket smash from Medvedev. Really perfect form and technique. He completely mangled the racket in one movement, which I think is crucial to the optimum racket smash, and he did it at 6-3 down in the second set tiebreak, already training by a set, so not an important moment or anything, and he did it in full knowledge that he already had one warning, so he was just conceding the set. So I'm pleased for him that he did a good racket smash and he didn't concede the set with a limp sort of a bouncer. But yeah, it was not world number 5 Daniil Medvedev out there today.
No, he did come up with a couple of little bits of aggro, didn't he? He did one body shot at Fucsovics, which Fucsovics didn't like at all.
He said, "Hey man, I'm just trying to win the point." I loved it. I really loved it. He was having all sorts of aggro with. I loved the way he switches into Russian for his aggro when he doesn't want his coach to understand him. Because there was some French aggro, because he's fluent in French and obviously his coach is French. And I was understanding that aggro and that was great. And then he suddenly switched into Russian to do some sort of coded aggro. And that annoyed me that I couldn't understand that. Yeah, he was great. He, after spending 2 days sort of marvelling at everybody's extraordinary layers of outerwear, Daniil Medvedev strolls out on the Suzanne Longlin court. It's 10 degrees. Everyone else is wearing sort of 6 pairs of tights. It's dark and he's wearing a baseball cap. I don't know why. He doesn't wear a baseball cap in bright sunshine. I mean, I guess because of the floodlights, but anyway. He's a curiosity, isn't he? He was good fun today, but definitely not anyone that's anywhere close to being a contender on this surface. He's a long way off. I do think he's such a clever player. I do think he'll make a point over the course of his career of figuring it out, of really trying to crack it. But it's going to be a long old road.
I'm not sure. I just don't know whether that trajectory of shot will ever get
it done. But I think he'll try. You know, there are some players, Matt and I, just before coming on air, I noted that Angelique Kerber had lost today. And I was saying, you know, it surprises me that she hasn't, I mean, she might never have been successful on the surface, but it surprises me that she hasn't made more of a concerted effort to try and adapt to clay. It feels like in her mind, it's just, no, clay is never going to happen for me. I don't think Medvedev will do that. I don't think he'll just say, no, it's not the one for me. But yeah, long, long road. And he doesn't have a grass court season around the corner to look forward to now, does he?
At least you got your prediction right.
Yes. Thank you for that.
God, so annoying. John Millman's just lost 5 games in a row to lose.
He was 5-2 up.
Yeah. All right, I know that. I've just...
Meanwhile, Arantxa Rus and somebody I've never heard of, Burrell, initial C.
Clara.
Anyone know? I'll take it. They are just going into a third set and it's 11:45 p.m. in Paris. How many people do you think are watching that? How many of the 1,000 people are still there watching that, do you think? And what temperature do you reckon it is in Paris? 5 degrees?
Are there more people or more degrees?
Great question.
Are there more people or more players?
So yeah, definitely a night session.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
What else did we have today? We had Dominic Thiem, David. You were quite taken with Thiem, would that be fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah, he was a little bit of a slow start, I thought. And part of that was because Marin Cilic actually came out playing pretty well, I thought. And it was a rematch of their one at the US Open a couple of weeks ago that Thiem won in four and really should have won in three. But I thought Cilic really took the fight to him today. And he came into the net 20 times in a set and a half today. And his tactic was come into the net, do stunned, short, angled volleys that Thiem wouldn't be able to get to because he's all the way at the back of the court. And they worked some of the time. He won 13 out of 20 points doing that. But the rest of the time, he was just marmalised from the back of the court. And we talk about players who can hit through the surface. Well, Thiem at the end of it said, I quite like these conditions. You know, it's a bit like being in Austria. It's a little bit cold.
Let's not bring up Austria again, David.
And he just looked perfectly content that he'd got this win. I mean, his draw isn't easy at all, but there was a little purple patch in the third set. He'd already got the first two sets on the board comfortably enough. Then he just hit three consecutive backhand winners down the line, and we were in our commentary box. We were just drooling over the way he was doing it. It looked like he could hit a winner at that point any time he decided he wanted to try. And he just looked so confident and comfortable in his own skin as a Grand Slam champion.
Matt, are you regretting, and should I be regretting, what we've picked Dominic Thiem to do at this French Open? Because I think we've picked the same thing.
You mean we've picked him to lose to 12-time French Open champion Rafael Nadal?
Yes.
I still feel okay with that.
Okay, good. I'm looking for reassurance, and I found it. Great.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I can't pick someone to beat Nadal. I mean, it's the French Open, and he's healthy, so I'm still going with him. But I agree, Thiem looked great, and if there were any doubts at all that he was going to struggle to, in his first match back as a Grand Slam champion, and his first match back on clay, I mean, that those were just erased immediately. And I think actually Gunter Bresnik, his former coach, came up with a line the other day that, you know, you don't need to worry about Thiem adapting to clay. It only takes him half an hour from any surface whatsoever. He's just so natural on it. And that kind of showed, because like David said, I thought Cilic had the correct game plan. It's just that he was made to make quite a lot of errors because he had to push himself to the absolute upper limits and extremities of his game. And if Cilic is having to do that against Thiem, I think that kind of shows you just how well Dominic Thiem is playing. I'm already getting a little bit excited about the prospect of Thiem versus Wawrinka in round four.
Two
people who I think are just, like we've said, thriving in these conditions. And I mean, last year I was excited about the Wawrinka Tsitsipas round four, and that happened and was glorious. And this feels like the one that needs to happen at this event.
Mm. I'm quite looking forward to Jack Sock in the next round for a Thiem, but
I just think his
backhand won't stand up to it, will it?
No, I think Dominic Thiem will make mincemeat out of Jack Sock. I mean, you've just sold me a story about Dominic Thiem being invincible. So no, of course I don't think Jack Sock's going to trouble him.
You don't have to take all my stories as absolute certainties. And give him my record.
I have heard word that Petra Kvitova against Océane Dodin, first up on Châtelet today, was a cracker. Straight sets for Kvitova, 6-3, 7-5. Played under the roof. We know that Kvitova loves indoor tennis. Should we be talking about Petra Kvitova, perhaps?
Well, I think if she's always able to play in those conditions, absolutely. I think it's possible that she might not be on the Châtelet court and there could be a lot of wind and suddenly I wouldn't be fancying her in these conditions. But today, absolutely, she hit 29 winners in the match and just generally struck the ball so well and through Dodin. And she was talking about how she has changed her string tension this week, you know, and we're talking about players making adjustments, and she says she never does that, but she's decided it's kind of a necessity, and it really worked today. Whether she would have to change it again if she was playing in different conditions, but certainly she was excellent, and she's in the right half of the draw. She's in the bottom half, which I think is going to be quite open and a little bit of a free-for-all, so perhaps someone like Kvitova could come through it.
Is that the half you've got Fiona Ferro bulldozing her way through?
The very same.
for technical listeners, is she gone up or down on her string tension?
She's gone down, so she's getting more power.
More power, right. Yes, that would make sense. We had Elise Cornet winning an all-French battle. We had Kiki Bertens. Now, this match was first up on Suzanne Longlin. She was involved in a very weird match with Katerina Zavatska, a young Ukrainian. 6-2 for Zavatska the first set, 6-2 to Bertens the second set, and the third set was 6-love, and Zavatska ran out of rackets. Would that be an accurate summary?
That is exactly what happened. She only had three with her, and she broke strings in all of them. In a very congested period of time, so there wasn't sort of time for them to get restrung. So she
people don't really break strings that often anymore. That's okay.
And once the third one went, she sort of just held up her racket, looked at her coach, and her coach passed her his own racket, which he happened to have
with
him.
Should that be allowed? Should that be allowed?
Yes, I think yes. I think that's fine.
I think you've got to bring your equipment to the court.
But she did. I mean, I think if she'd smashed all her rackets, I mean, that is like Goran Ivanisevic famously did and literally broke them himself. But breaking a string can't really be helped, can it?
Well, bring more rackets if you're prone to string breakage. Do you know what only having three rackets and breaking three strings says to me? Sabotage. I'd be
not Kiki Bertens.
I'd be getting a detective on that case. I'm not pointing any fingers. Kiki Bertens, the Tonya Harding of tennis.
Oh my God.
That is not an accusation. Kiki Bertens, she's the fifth seed. She has come in with no form whatsoever. But equally, she came in with a lot of form last year and hated that and crashed out to, of all people, Victoria Kuzmova. Well, she had to retire with an illness, but that's not what Kuzmova's telling people. So I don't know what to make of Kiki Bertens. She's in no form at all. You know, at one point today, she was 6-2 down to Katerina Zavatska, who I hadn't heard of before today. And I'm thinking, well, she's a write-off this year, but I think she likes being written off, so I just don't know.
She likes to not be talked about, for sure, and she is a natural clay courter. She does love the surface. So, but I can't remember what the illness or injury was last week when she pulled out. But
it was Achilles. It was an Achilles injury, but she did say she felt something, and she said it was mostly preventative, the retirement, because the French Open was around the corner.
Mm. Well, she's certainly a threat if she can get a run together.
And it's quite an impressive turnaround today, because we talk so much about, you know, team and Nadal coming into this tournament and being able to play themselves into it a little bit, given that they haven't got so many matches that they would like. Well, Kiki Bertens doesn't have the luxury of five sets to play herself into it. She was a set from going out of this tournament in round one, and to be able to sort of maintain a sense of calm about it, like I think she did. I think she realised that Zavatska was probably going to unravel a little bit, and if I just stay solid here, I can come through this. And you know, there was a real urgency required, and yeah, and she managed to do that, and she's still in the tournament. I think that's quite a underrated win probably for Burton's today.
I would probably apply similar logic to Elina Svitolina's win over Varvara Gracheva. 7-6, 6-4, she was 4-love up in the first set, got and then got pegged back and then served for it at 5-4, and eventually got taken to the tie break. And she was down in the second set as well. She was 3-1, trailing by break. She really had to grit her teeth through that one. Quick turnaround from the win in Strasbourg. She wasn't enjoying herself today. Gracheva, she's got lovely smooth strokes, really nice to watch. And she could hit through the court. And Svitolina, you know, she's comfortable being a counter-puncher, but she's not comfortable having to completely generate her own pace. She wants to have some pace to absorb from the other end of the court, and there was just nothing today. And it was tough for her, but she did problem solve, and she did adapt, and she hung tough. You know, I do worry she doesn't have the weapons in these conditions, but I do think she has the mentality to do well. So she's going to be interesting to watch, I think. Third seed, she you were saying yesterday, David, that form you think is going to be critical. Well, she's coming in off the win in Strasbourg.
Well, yeah, she certainly had a few clay court miles under the belt there. I mean, the issue for her is she doesn't have the Grand Slam pedigree over the years. She's got to a semi-final finally, but she's never looked like winning one of them. And she usually just runs into somebody who's playing lights out tennis, and she didn't really have that in her game. And so, yeah, I think she needs other people not to be on it as much. And I know that sounds pretty harsh, but I just think that's the case, really. I think she will give you a good, solid level, but she will probably run into somebody who's just playing too good.
Yeah, I think I probably agree on the basis of today. She then probably watched from the locker room or wherever she was post-match her boyfriend Gaël Monfils crash out over the French Open in four sets to Alexander Bublik, the first time Monfils has lost in the first round of his home slam since 2005 on his debut as a wild card. And that was to Guillermo Canas, who very much sounds like a name from the past, just to put that into context. It was quite a sorry sight today, Gaël Monfils. He was so flat. I don't think he was injured or ill. He was moving fine. There were flashes of the Gaël Monfils we know. And it wasn't a question of not being able to hit through the court, because when he did, he really had success. When he unleashed on the forehand and found his range, it was impressive. And it was everything that we love about Gaël Monfils. But it would only be for one or two points at a time, and then it would fall apart. I think he hit 10 or more double faults today. Was really struggling on serve, didn't enjoy being messed around by Alexander Bublik, didn't enjoy the I don't think he had that much of a problem with the antics of Bublik. I think he went onto the court expecting it. I don't think he enjoyed sort of having to be the straight man today while Bublik did his thing. You know, Monfils, not with aggro or antics or anything, but he likes to be the guy you're looking at, doesn't he? He likes to be the one to draw your eye, and he wasn't the show today. Bublik was.
Gaël Monfils without fans is just not Gaël Monfils to my mind. And I didn't watch the match, but I just can't imagine it.
You were commenting on that while you were watching, Catherine. You were saying, you know, this match needs a crowd. Monfils needs a crowd to get into it, and that really reminded me of a conversation you had with Daniela Hantikova on the Prime coverage. I don't know whether it was during the US Open or maybe during Kentucky, but you were debating whether not having fans is going to be helpful or a hindrance for what you might call the showy players, and Monfils would be one of them, whether not having the fans to actually play up to might kind of focus their minds and just sort of concentrate them on their actual tennis, and whether they'll be able to produce. Well, I think today was the firm and hard evidence that those players are best when they have that crowd and when they are playing up to them. And that in itself brings out their own best tennis. And I noticed that Fabio Fognini lost today in the first round as well. And he's probably another one that you would put in that category. It was just kind of dead on the court and wasn't able to find any kind of inspiration. And yeah, it was quite a miserable, sorry sight.
Bublik's underarm serve, wasn't they? That was just a thing of absolute beauty. So it's so good. The way he fakes it, the way he sets up to do the overarm and then just right at the last minute, it was an ace, right? It was an ace.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clean ace.
If you were going to back anyone to sort of sprint and get an underarm serve, it would be Monfils. So I think that kind of just shows how well disguised and how good it was.
Absolutely.
It's a very different Gems life post lockdown results. I mean, Svitolina can barely lose a match and Monfils can't even win a match. And kind of strange. I noticed they've launched.
I haven't heard anyone say Gems life for a while, Matt. I hadn't missed it.
Well, I brought it up because they've launched their own program together. Have you seen about this? On Twitch.
Like TV program. Oh, God.
Twitch, which was the alternative sponsor that made Monfils withdraw from the virtual Madrid Open. Do you remember that? Do you remember that? Those weird times back in May.
What's Twitch for my mum?
It's a site where people...
David's asking for a friend,
It's a site where people film themselves playing video games and other online
services. You watch other
services.
People play video games, David. Yeah.
Film themselves playing a computer
Everyone's
game.
Doing it, apparently, including Gems Life.
Yeah, although they're not playing video games.
Who wants
games.
To watch somebody else
playing
a computer
apparently hundreds
game.
Of millions of people.
Yeah, it is big. And their contribution to Twitch is something called Catch Up or something, where they're just talking about tennis every Sunday. But
that sounds like a podcast.
I know,
what?
But they don't have the rights, I don't think, to talk about slams. So they're not going to be doing them for the next 2 weeks.
Right, okay. I'll make a note of that in my diary.
Have we got the rights?
that is what I'm slightly worrying about as well. Now, the reason that Monfils didn't have even a smattering of fans watching him on Longlen is probably because of Corentin Moutet, who was drawing the fans to him like a moth to a flame in his match against that. Somebody help me here.
Lorenzo Giustino.
That's the badger. What was the final score in this 6 hour, 6 minute match?
18-16 in the fifth set. This was a match
which literally could only happen at the French Open.
Yes. This was a match which started yesterday with a 6-love set. And it was still going on today at 18-16 in the fifth. It's the second longest match in French Open history. The other one was also played over 2 days. I think that was
Giustino
Santoro
was
Clement.
The winner.
Yes, he was the winner. Moutet served for it at least twice in the fifth set.
Yeah.
And I think in total, he won something like 25 more points in the match, you know, a whole set's worth. I suppose that was the 6-love set. But as you said, the fans sort of, I hesitate to use the word flocked to it because there's probably only about 100 there, but it made such a difference. And it's one of my favourite courts at the French Open. It's kind of sunk into the ground and there is this amphitheatre feel and they were really getting into it. And both players were quite volatile and emotional. You know, we know Moutet is, but Giustino was as well. And they were both sort of giving it back to each other. And it was great fun.
He's not watching his millions drip down tonight, is he? That probably feels a bit silly.
There was definitely...
Talking about millions.
I mean, there was definitely a drip down joke to be made when Moutet was in tears at the end of it. But I didn't want
I'm
to make that
he
joke.
He just has to suck up the drip down jokes because he's made his bed there.
Enrico Riva, the stat man who's so good, put out this this stat that in 2019, Giustino earned €83,071 in 65 matches combined. And today, having won his second main draw match, he won more than that. He won 84,000 in a week.
He should release a rap single about it.
and he qualified as well. So he's played something like 13 hours of tennis to get to round two. So whoever's got him in the next round.
Bonanza.
He ended last year with 9 consecutive losses.
Garbiñe Muguruza, 8-6 in the third. What happened there?
You got lucky.
Well, I mean...
That's what happened there.
Is that what happened? Did Muguruza get lucky?
I don't know. I didn't see the match. But, I mean, she was 3-love down in the deciding set against Tamara Zidancic. And like I say, we didn't have a monitor on that match, but that did not look a good situation. But she's a fighter, isn't she, Muguruza? The reason I say Catherine and Matt got lucky is because, haven't you both got her in the final?
Yes.
Oh.
She just for some reason seemed like a safer bet than Jennifer Brady. I don't know why.
Something to do with having won the title.
Have you ever seen Jennifer Brady play on clay, David?
No. I mean, I've barely seen her at all until a couple of weeks ago. But anyway, now I think she's awesome. So anyway. She makes her bow tomorrow.
Muguruza is through. Vondrousova, last year's finalist, is not. She made her exit pretty limply at the hands of Iga Swiatek. Now, look, that is a tough first round draw. Swiatek, her breakthrough was at the French Open last year, wasn't it? She reached a round of 16 as a 16-year-old, or 18-year-old, rather. And nonetheless, I wouldn't necessarily have even said Vondrousova was a favourite for that match today, but the manner of that defeat was a little bit sad for me. How much of it did you get to see, Matt?
Yeah, I saw the second set, basically, and it was a bit sad because Vondrousova was completely different to the player we saw at Roland Garros last year, where everything she was touching, basically, was just perfect. You know, such a fluidity to her game. Didn't she reach the final without dropping a single set, I think? And there's such variety in her game and creativity and... It was kind of lacking a bit today, and she was quite moody and sulking a little bit on the court. She doesn't seem particularly happy, I didn't think. She wasn't helped by the fact that Swiatek was fantastic, and I was kind of surprised that she wasn't seeded, because she's certainly playing tennis of that caliber, and she's another player who's got so much choice in her game, and yet she always seems to deploy the right shot at the right time. It's very impressive, and she had no trouble hitting through the court. She hit a lot of winners, and was just generally the much more positive player out there. And I mean, I joined the match in the second set, and it was never in doubt at all who was going to win that match.
And she now plays Sue Shea.
Yes.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
Fantastic section of the draw.
That is going to be great. What else have we had today? Liam Brody lost out in 4 sets, I think, to Jiří Veselý. Yeah. What happened there?
Yeah, it was. And Brody did well to level it at 1 set all, and it looked like he had a chance to extend it all the way. But I mean, Veselý's just a bit too good. I mean, 2 left-handers. Veselý, I've always thought that he would do more in his career, to be honest, than he's ended up doing. If you think back to when he beat Djokovic in Monte Carlo, when Djokovic was the totally dominant player in the world and just literally not losing matches, and he beat him there. I always thought he would do more, but when you put these two up against each other, Brody had done really well to get there, and he just didn't quite have enough. He fought, and he got to 4 sets, but yeah, he was pretty well beaten in the
end. Cam Norrie lost out in 5 sets... under the lights to Galan. How much of that did you see, David?
Very little, but I know Norrie was two sets to one up, and that's a pretty poor loss, to be honest, in the end. I mean, look, maybe he's playing a guy who's way better than I am aware of, but he's playing an opponent that's 150-odd in the world, and he was two sets to one up Norrie. That's a rough loss.
I've always thought Cameron Norrie doesn't perform his best when he's the favourite in a match. I feel like this is something that's been a thing with Norrie for a while. I mean, if you think back to even just the US Open, he wasn't brilliant against Diego Schwartzman, but he played very well in that match when he wasn't expected to win. And he's had a few what you would think are kind draws at slams when he's been the favourite in a match, and he's not quite managed to take advantage of them. I think he prefers the dynamics when he's the underdog.
British hopes now rest on Heather Watson, who faces Matt's new femme du jour, Fiona Ferro, tomorrow. I must make it clear that Matt has not used that expression. it's all on Heather Watson, but she's taking on future quarterfinalist Fiona Ferro, apparently, tomorrow. Jan-Lennard Struff got the better of Francis Tiafoe. That's in my notes. Does anybody want to talk about that? Five sets, I think, was it?
Yes. Mm. Only because he's also in my quarterfinals.
Oh, is that where you've put it in the notes?
Yeah, so that was that was another sigh of relief today.
Okay, well, to counteract your smugness, Victoria Kuzmova, Matt, the latest in the series of disappointments.
Yeah, 6-1, 6-2 to Kristina Pliskova. Didn't see a ball of it. I've moved on.
Last couple of bits of business, then. We've got Nick Kyrgios giving Mats Wilander very predictable aggro on Twitter in follow-up to Wilander's comments about Andy Murray yesterday. He says, just read what Wilander said about Andy Murray. Shut up, Mats. No one cares. Mars, just know that however long you stay, we all appreciate and enjoy your tennis and banter. Also, I've never watched a point of Mats Wilander. And then there are some emojis. I mean, a bit like Victoria Azarenka yesterday when she was making a scene and exiting the long lane court. I agree with all of the sentiments. He's just rather ruined it with the last point about just sort of saying I've never watched.
I'm struggling to see what's good about never having watched a point of the career of a 7-time Grand Slam champion and former world number one. How does that strengthen your argument?
It doesn't. But I think looking to Nick Kyrgios for watertight logical arguments is probably not what we should all be doing. But anyway,
Karen
sticking
Khachanov
up for his mate,
had a
isn't
go
he?
Back at him.
Yeah. Yes, and
Karen Khachanov told him to pull his head in.
Catch fire
oh,
in the way that
just
I
just has.
Breaking news!
Oh, excellent.
5 minutes ago, Kyrgios replied to Khachanov saying, "Nah, I'm good, dude. Muzz and I respect each other, and if someone starts talking about one of mine, then I'll come at them. I'm supposed to respect Mats for what? Hitting a ball over the net? I don't give my respect for that."
Right. This is all getting so dignified. Will you put it on the agenda? We will keep you updated on just boys having a pissing contest on Twitter. I'm sure you're all on the edge of your seats. Final bit of business. Cecchinato pronunciation. We'll be getting it right, David, I think. Were we?
Turns out we were. In fact, just to prove that point of how we pronounce Cecchinato's name, here's something we were sent on Twitter by one of our followers and listeners who drew our attention to somebody that had filmed a little bit of John McEnroe trying to get to grips with this and the subsequent confirmation. Just have a listen to this.
Is it Cecchinato?
Yes, so that was Tancredi Palmieri, who is a beIN Sports correspondent and also a contributor to Gazzetta dello Sport, who was heard there, and wasn't he magnificent?
Yes, he
so
was.
So we got it right, Catherine.
Yeah, it's like a scene from The Godfather.
Excellent.
I think that's it for day two of the weirdest Grand Slam of all time, certainly in our memory.
It's not getting any less weird, is
it's
it?
It's not getting any less weird. No, we all need to embrace the weird. I'll work on that tomorrow. We haven't mentioned Cam, so I'm going to. Cam is our lovely mascot. He's a border collie. He's a sheep herder that doesn't like sheep. he is owned by lovely Steve, who brought Cam to our attention. And Steve made the most magnificent video about Cam to bring him to our attention and put him forward as a candidate to be our official second French Open mascot. As my brother said yesterday when I sent it to him, he said, "That's like a professional quality video. I've seen charity adverts with lower production standards than that." and he's absolutely right. It is well worth 3 minutes of your time. If you haven't watched Cam's or Steve's video about Cam, you absolutely should. You won't regret it. You might need some tissues, but you won't regret it. And we are chuffed and proud to have Cam as our French Open mascot. And no pressure, Steve. You've done us proud already, but we would love some further Cam content. Then there is silence, but they're nodding. They're nodding.
Yeah. Go on, Steve. Get on it.
Yeah, what he said. So this has been day two of Roland Garros 2020. What are we in store for tomorrow? Weirdness, I reckon. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.